You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to my next off-season podcast. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and this week, this episode, we're going to be talking more about social strategy and all of the things surrounding it and all of everything. But in particular, what we're going to talk about today is something that has plagued the community that watches social strategy games, the people that play it. Something that's very controversial, something that a lot of people have a lot of opinions on, and that is the bitter jury problem. Since the beginning of these games being televised, the beginning of Survivor, the beginning of Big Brother, the jury has been a source of controversy, of debate. The decision that the jury makes, was it right? Was it wrong? Is there a right or is there a wrong? It's something that people discuss endlessly, and it never really gets resolved. One of the major problems in getting this conversation resolved, or at least somewhere stable, is that a lot of people end up talking about different things. What even is a bitter jury? What even is a right or wrong decision? What does it mean to be a better player? Should the jury vote for a better player? All kinds of questions that have lots of different answers and interpretations and are often talked about in very simplistic terms and ways that ultimately will end up either being misinterpreted or just two people talking at each other and not really understanding that they have different interpretations of the same words. So let's get to the bottom of it here. Let's talk about the bitter jury problem. Is there a bitter jury problem? To break this down, I want to begin at the beginning and break this down into the simple, most basic components that there are for this concept. So what is a jury? The jury is something that is part of the format of these social strategy games, where the basic idea behind the game is that everybody votes each other out until there's only two people left. Now, in Survivor, they've changed this to three for the most part, which I don't really like. But in Big Brother, it's two. And that makes sense, because when there's only two people left, how do you determine who wins? If they're both trying to vote each other out, then their votes would cancel out. And what's the tiebreaker? Well, essentially, the jury is the tiebreaker. Instead of having some kind of competition to determine the winner, the jury is going to come in and decide who wins the game. The jury consists of the people that these two players voted out along the way. When Big Brother started, it was the entire cast that was on the jury. After a couple of seasons, they changed it so that only the last seven people evicted became the jury. They then expanded it to the last nine people evicted. But either way, the basics remain the same here. There is a group of people who were playing the game and lost, who are going to essentially break the tie between the final two contestants remaining and decide which one wins the game. So I went back to Big Brother 2, where the jury was first introduced. And the jury is a different concept entirely than season 1 of Big Brother, where they didn't vote each other out. America voted everybody out, and America decided the winner. This is an entirely different game in an entirely different format. So in Big Brother 2, they introduced the concept of the jury, and I could be wrong, I might have missed it, but from what I saw, it did seem like Julie and the announcer were pretty careful with the language that they used when talking about the jury and what their purpose was. They said that the jury was there to determine the winner, to decide who the winner was, and they did not list any criteria for how the jury should be voting or what the jury will be looking for or should be looking for, just that the jury will be deciding the winner. This isn't super important because I believe that this stance on the jury will end up changing to some degree, but it is important to note here that at the conception of what the jury was in Big Brother, at least, there was no criteria for how the jury should vote. More importantly, there were no rules, and the jury was given no incentive to vote with any kind of criteria in mind. They are literally just thrown into a roundtable and a questioning session and then told to cast their vote. That's all there is. So in the first season with a jury, Big Brother 2, the jury ended up voting between Dr. Will and Nicole. They vote for Dr. Will. This wasn't a particularly controversial decision, though there were plenty of people that disagreed with the jury's decision. And back then, there were plenty of people out there who did not believe that the person who played the best game or who was the best player should win. They believed that the jury had no criteria, and they fought against the idea that the best player or the best game should win, that if you are a bad person, like Dr. Will was, and you lied and you did bad things in the game, that you shouldn't be rewarded because this is real money that's going to this person. There are still some people out there that believe these things, and their opinion is perfectly valid because, again, despite the fact that the culture has shifted, there still is no official rule forcing the jury to vote with a particular set of criteria. And there is still no real incentive for the jury to vote with a certain criteria. So right out of the gate here, I hope that we can establish that there is no criteria. There's no incentive. There's no rule. The jury is allowed to vote however they want with whatever criteria they want. If they want to vote for the person who has a dog over the person who doesn't have a dog, they have every right to do so. If they want to vote for the person who likes orange juice instead of milk, then that can be the reason that they vote for that person, and nobody can prevent them from doing so. Nor is there any incentive, any real incentive, for them not to do so. They don't make any extra money by voting with a specific criteria. The producers aren't necessarily more likely to invite them back if they vote with a certain criteria. And the game just ends, and most of the fans just bleed away. So there's not even really that much societal or fan base pressure on the house guests to vote a certain way. They might get attacked for it. They might get some heat for their reasoning, but that's about all. The only real incentive left there is that when you're playing the game, you want the jury to vote for the person who played the best game, unless you know and are self-aware enough to know that you've played a bad game and you want them to be voting for somebody who didn't play the best game, aka you. But most people believe that they're playing the best game or at least close to it and want the jury to reward the best game if they get there, because essentially by getting there, they're succeeding in their plan, and they think that by succeeding, they're playing a good game and therefore want to be rewarded. So there is an incentive when you're in the game to want the jury to vote for the better player. But as soon as you're voted out, that incentive disappears. It did exist once, and that can carry on, but it doesn't have to. And there's no real reason for it to, on an individual level, at least. So you might be asking, why am I even talking about the better player? What does that mean? Why does that matter? If we're talking about how there's no criteria, why does this particular thing keep popping up? And that's because back when the show started, the jury did vote for Dr. Will, and not necessarily because he was the better player, but just because he was more likable at the end of the day than Nicole was. But in season 3, this became a problem because Lisa was up against Danielle in the final two. And Lisa was theoretically more likable than Danielle, to the house guests at least. But the audience liked Danielle more. She was so entertaining and so good at the game. To see Danielle work so hard and find so much success, only to lose to a group of people who were very upset with her because she called them the devil, or because basically because she played the game, because she lied to them, because she beat them, and they didn't like that. From the audience's perspective, seeing this group of people act in a way that seemed very self-righteous, and seeing them deny the win to somebody who had worked so hard and done so well and revolutionized strategy in the game was frustrating. And the producers thought so too, because by the time the next season comes around, they changed the rules. They didn't change the rules to incentivize the jury to vote for the better player, no. But they did change the rules to adjust the amount of information that the jury receives. Instead of allowing all the members of the jury to go home and watch the show and see the diary room sessions and all of those things, the jury was going to be sequestered together in a house, away from the outside world, no contact, no extra information apart from every time a player is voted out and comes into the house and shows them some tapes of the competitions and the ceremonies. So right away, it's only a couple of seasons, the producers and the audience who are on board with this are trying very hard to influence the jury, to point them in a particular direction because they were not happy with the criteria that the jury had been using to that point. The biggest factor here being the jury should not be allowed to see diary room sessions. Those should remain fully private. And the implication there also is that good players will now not be punished by revealing their strategy in the diary room where the jury can get mad about it. They can hide it, essentially, and they will hopefully win more often. But at the end of the day, it wasn't exactly a rule change that very forcefully urged the jury in a particular direction toward the better player. It was more so a change to encourage openness in the diary room, which, from the perspective of the audience and I think the players, seemed like a push in the direction of the better player should win. And you do see that the audience from the first jury season, Dr. Will, where there was some controversy about should he have won given the things that he did in the game, to moving forward a few years later, you've already got Richard Hatch, you already had Richard Hatch, you even have Brian Heidick in Survivor winning. The culture of the audience is shifting in the direction of if you played the game well, you should be rewarded. And I want to propose that this is an inevitable shift. It's not particularly necessary with the audience-controlled format, because in the audience-controlled format, the audience is in complete control and the players are not playing a game so much as the audience is deciding who they like or who they think is best or whatever. But in a game where the players are in control of their own fate and you're seeing them play the game hard and that's what's bringing the entertainment, I do think that it's inevitable that the audience will want the better players to be rewarded in the end by the jury. Because if the jury does not reward good gameplay, then good gameplay is less and less incentivized. And ultimately, you'd see the show break down if the better player always lost in the end. If the better player always lost, then you'd see the best strategy would become don't be the better player. Actively try to be bad and just hope you get lucky, which I imagine most people would say that breaks down the show. It might be a different show that maybe people would like, but it would be a lot more similar to a BB UK where the audience just decides, and you'd probably want the game to just become BB UK at that point, because why are we even watching them vote each other out if there's no real strategy or no real attempt to be good at the game? So I think that if you have a format like this, the shift in desire for the better player to win will always happen. And we see it happen in Survivor. We see it happen in Big Brother. The producers want it. The audience wants it. Even the players at the time of when they're still in the game want it. And that leaves just a few holdouts. The people actually on the jury who, on an individual level, don't care about the future of the show. Don't care about what the audience wants necessarily. Don't care about what the producers want necessarily. Don't care about what the players left in the game want necessarily. They have the decision. They have the responsibility, and it's their decision. And there is no official incentive or rule to prevent them from making their own decision. Apart from the now aforementioned sequestering, which is limiting the information that they have. So here's part of the problem. The audience wants the jury to reward the better player. The producers want the jury to reward the better player. The players want the jury to reward the better player while they're still in the game. And I want to say also that this is, of course, very generalized. Not everybody in the audience wants this. Not everybody in the producer camp want this, I would imagine. And not all of the players want this while they're in the game. But the majority, and I would say the vast majority, do want this. So you have all of these people, all of these external forces wanting the jury to go one way, but the jury doesn't have the same incentives and they are free to do whatever they want. And they have a lot of power to determine the outcome of the game and determine the winner of the game. And that's the source of conflict here, that the audience, the producers, and even sometimes the players might vehemently disagree with the decision that the jury made. Because everybody wants them to vote for the better player, but they have no obligation to do so. So let's take a brief pause here and quickly go into why this is even more complicated than what I just described. Because we have to talk about what the better player means. What does it mean to be the better player? What does it mean to have played the better game? These things are not nearly as simple as you might think. First, you can separate those two things, the better player and the better game, if you want. It might help if you do, so that the intention behind your words might be understood a little better, because there are many people that say the person who won always played the best game. And that can be technically true. In that particular season, in that particular game, the person who won played the best because they won. It's circular logic. What this does not do is credit the player, it credits the game. And that's because luck is such a major factor in Big Brother, in any social strategy game, even ones without these extra luck factors added on, like in Big Brother. So while it's not possible to confidently say that the person who won was always the best player, you can technically say that they played the best game, because again, it's self-evident. Somebody who did not win did not technically play a better game than the person who did win, because the person who won, won. Doesn't matter how lucky they got. Doesn't matter if the person sitting next to them or the person in third place had a 99% chance to win and they had a 1% chance to win and they got lucky with something that was completely out of their control, they still got lucky. It was still the exact set of decisions and maneuvers that was required of them to win the game, regardless of how unlikely it was. Now, I would argue that even just making the statement, the winner is the person who played the best game always, is a little bit redundant, because there's no real additional analysis that can be done on top of it. But there are plenty of people that subscribe to this idea and they really hold firm. And I think often it's used as a defense against some other fallacious arguments. And so there is certainly room for it for people that don't see it, I guess. But there's another way to say who played the better game. And that ties into who is the better player. And you do that by attempting to remove as much of the luck involved as you can and take a look at the decisions made by the player that maximized their chances of winning the game at every possible decision point. So basically, instead of looking at the person who won and their game was the winning game and therefore the best, you look at, okay, acknowledging that luck is a big factor in the game, what kind of agency did this player have to increase their odds of winning? Because a player that's able to increase their odds of winning is going to be more successful across many seasons of the show than somebody who is reliant upon the stagnant odds that they get going in to start. So, for example, every time a player goes into a season, they go in with a certain percent chance of winning that season. And the percentage that they have, the chance they have of winning, is going to fluctuate depending on a whole host of factors that are beyond their control, like the cast that they go in with, or the twists that are introduced to this particular game, the competitions that they decide to have for that season, the order of the competitions that they decide to have for that season, all kinds of different factors that are completely outside the control of the player will determine the likelihood of that player succeeding in that season. There's nothing that anybody can do to control those factors. So the best players are the ones that are able to maximize their chances of winning after being given the hand that they are dealt. So if somebody goes in with a 10% chance of winning based on their circumstances, a good player is able to take those odds and steadily improve them as they make alliances and plans, and they lie and they manipulate and they make their way to the end. We talked about this a little bit in the first HOH podcast, where we mentioned that older players have a harder time having won the first HOH than younger players. And this is kind of common knowledge that if you are an older player, you're going to have a harder time winning the game than a younger player. You're going to have a harder time fitting in, harder time winning competitions. The game is basically on a harder difficulty setting than the rest of the cast, and your chances of winning are considerably lower. So for a player like that to exceed and do very well would speak very highly of their skill as a player. Now, there's something to be said about factoring in a player's base level percentage going into any given season. Going back to another recent podcast that I did about the importance of diversity in casting, it's not entirely fair to judge a player's skill in the game to say this is a better player than this other person just because they go in a minority position, which makes them less likely to succeed. Now, you can go to something like swimming, where your body type and structure just naturally is going to help you as a swimmer, depending on your genetics and all of that and whatever. There's some value there in the discussion, I'm sure. But I think, for me at least, when I'm talking about best player, I would like to limit the value of the starting advantage and focus more on a player's ability to maximize their odds of getting to the end and winning. But obviously it's very difficult. It's not like somebody comes in with a percentage hovering above their head, and at every decision point, that percentage changes based on whether it was a good decision or a bad decision. It's a very difficult thing to analyze, and ultimately is a very subjective kind of art of analysis. And so expecting people within the game to be able to have an objective view of who was doing the best, or even to just have the same interpretation of what does the best mean, is asking for a lot. And this can get complicated by things like a game that looks very impressive on the surface, that lots of impressive things happened within the game for that particular player, for that particular game, and they look really good because of it. It's very flashy. They might have made a very flashy, big, boomy move that was actually bad for their game and made it less likely that they were going to win, but increases the perception that they're a good player. And the audience buys into that as well. So does the audience want the jury to vote for the person who maximized their odds or who was the favorite to win because of the ability that they had? Or do they want the jury to vote for the person who had the flashiest game or the most impressive individual game and not necessarily the best player? It's not always clear. There are people who came in with high percentage chances to win, who maximized their odds to the fullest extent that was possible and dominated their game and never experienced the odds going against them. Somebody like Derek. And you have people like Dan, who came in with a lower percentage to start with and had things work against him and had a harder climb to the top and experienced much more adversity. So which was the better game? You might say Derek. Who's the better player? You might say Dan. In both instances, you could make the case in the other direction. But if Derek and Dan were sitting next to each other in the final two, who's the better player? It's really hard. And there's very valid viewpoints on either side. There doesn't need to be two great players sitting next to each other either to make the difficulty that high. Because different people have different criteria for what it means to be a better player or have a better game. And most people don't distinguish between the two of those things in the first place. We won't go too deep into this, but even this idea of who would win most in 1,000 games is further complicated by the idea of, well, what do you mean by 1,000 games? Do you mean 1,000 consecutive games where they learn from their experience? Do you mean 1,000 games where every time their memory is reset? Do you mean 1,000 games where they have the reputation of having played the 1,000 games and nobody, or do you mean 1,000 games where nobody knows who they are? Are they playing against first-time players? Are they playing against other people who've played 1,000 times? All of these things make a significant difference because of the nature of social strategy. The game changes every time you play. If you run the same game back with the same players, you will not see the same outcome no matter how good the players are in the game. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show. So we've established that it's very, very difficult to determine who was the better player, let alone what that even means. So why does the audience get mad at the jury? As I said, we've established that the jury has every right to vote however they want. And even if you said, okay, yes, you have the right to, but you should at least try to vote for the better player because that's the criteria that is being pushed. But even then, it's very, very difficult to determine what the better player even is, especially within the context of the game, especially when you're not somebody that talks about Big Brother for a living. And I do want to point out that I keep saying that the producers are encouraging this narrative as well, that the jury should vote for the better player. And that's because they have changed the rules in the past to make it more likely that better players are rewarded. As I talked about before, they changed the actual rules in Big Brother 4. And then later they introduced this concept of the jury roundtable hosted by Dr. Will Kirby himself, who encourages the players to vote for the better player. So this notion of voting for the better player is firmly established both in the fan base and with the producers themselves, not to mention the culture of the game itself. So the producers have been trying to push this. The jurors have to attend this roundtable. They have to listen to Dr. Will. They are encouraging the jury to vote a certain way. Though they haven't really nailed down the incentive part yet, because the only real incentive that there is for the jury to vote in a certain way is to try and please the audience, which is a very difficult thing to do. Davon thought she was voting for the better player when she voted for Nicole over Paul, but the audience was upset with her anyway. And they called her bitter. They called the jury bitter, just like they called the Big Brother 3 jury bitter, just like they called the Big Brother 14 jury bitter. But all these juries are very different, with very different people and very different reasonings behind the votes. So what does it mean when somebody calls a jury bitter? I think it's important to define what this is because there are so many different definitions of this. I think that the incorrect definition that is often used is the jury got it wrong and therefore they were bitter. But I don't think this is very helpful. What does that even mean that the jury got it wrong, and why does that make them bitter? I think a more helpful definition or more useful definition is that a bitter jury is one that is voting against someone rather than for someone. A jury whose primary motivation behind the vote that they cast is the bitterness they feel toward the person that they are voting against. And even there's differences between what made them bitter. Are they bitter just because they lost, or are they bitter because they were made to be bitter? You might, if you really want to get specific, separate those two things out into a justifiably bitter jury and an unjustifiably bitter jury. And again, you have to make a judgment call as to what qualifies as justified and unjustified. But at least we're being a little more specific. Now, going back to this definition of what a bitter jury is, I think it's important to note that a jury can be bitter and still get it right. In season 10, Dan won over Memphis unanimously because the jury was bitter against Memphis. And Dan is widely considered to be the best player the game has ever seen. So he should have been rewarded there, according to the audience, according to the criteria that most people want to see. But the jury was bitter. They did not use the criteria that the audience wants. And the jury was bitter by design, by Dan's design. He wanted the jury to be bitter because he was directing their bitterness at the guy sitting next to him. He encouraged it. He fanned the flames of their bitterness. He chose Memphis for that purpose. And he knew that he would win if he sat next to Memphis. The Big Brother 10 jury is not chastised for being bitter because they got it right. In this case, from the audience's perspective, and likely from the producer's perspective as well, the ends justified the means. And if we go back to the Davon example, where people did chastise Davon for attempting to vote for the better player, in that situation, the means did not justify the ends. So I think it's important to point out here that the audience, the producers, none of them really even care about the criteria itself. They really only care about the result. And so the reason that there's any value given to the criteria is because certain criteria will lead toward a result that the audience is more likely to want. And to be fair, if the Big Brother 10 jury had voted for Dan because they thought he was brilliant and deserved it, they would probably be more respected than had they just given it to Dan because they were upset with Memphis. And I don't want to oversimplify that jury vote either. There were people that did give it to Dan because he deserved it and because they were impressed. So just because the jury is bitter does not mean that they're wrong, according to the ideal of voting for the better player. Now, some people might say that the jury decides who the better player is. And this goes back to the idea that the winner always played the better game because they won. But if you're willing to take a more nuanced stance on that statement, there is some value to the notion that jury management is important and it's a part of the game. If you're good at jury management, then you're a better player than if you're not good at jury management. But being really good at jury management does not necessarily make you a better player than somebody who is not as good at jury management, even if you're sitting with them in the final two. And just because you win the votes of the jury over the person you're sitting next to does not necessarily mean that you are good at jury management, nor does it necessarily mean that you are better at jury management than the person sitting next to you. In the same way that the best player does not always win the game, the better jury manager does not always receive more jury votes. Because as we said, luck is a massive part of Big Brother, and it doesn't magically stop when we hit the jury phase. But jury management is a whole other can of worms, and we will definitely have a podcast about it. But I think this podcast is a very necessary primer for that one, because defining this idea, this concept of a bitter jury, I think is very important. Because we can have better conversations about what it means to be a better player, what it means to do jury management, and what kinds of juries that we're talking about. So let's get back to bitter juries. There's a mistake that a lot of people make when they're talking about bitter juries. They often take this idea of a jury and they categorize them into two binary options, bitter and non-bitter. And I think this is a terrible way to look at juries, because, again, what's really happening here is that they're substituting right and wrong for bitter and not bitter. If they disagreed with the jury's decision, then they were wrong, and thus they were bitter. If they agree with the jury's decision, then they were right, and thus the jury was not bitter. But this breaks down in circumstances where the jury was voting from a bitter place and still voted correctly. And it also breaks down when the jury was voting from a place of non-bitterness, trying to reward the better player, and still voted incorrectly, according to the audience. And that's part of where we get all this confusion over, was it a bitter jury? Was it not a bitter jury? There's a lot of conflict and confusion. But I think there is value to defining a jury by their primary motivation, like bitterness, because there are other motivations as well, and other kinds of juries. There are juries that are upset that they lost, and they take out those hurt feelings of bitterness out on the person that played the best, because they throw a wrench into the system. Screw everyone, we're giving it to Josh. Sorry, guys. Whether or not it was justified, that's their primary motivation. There are other jurors who will vote for their friend over the person that played the better game. Is that the same as a bitter juror? I would say no. Because if I'm playing the game, distinguishing between a bitter juror and what you might call a loyal juror is actually very valuable to me, because I'm going to handle them differently. I'm going to manage them differently. If I look at them both and say, okay, well, they're both just bitter jurors, then I'm not going to have the nuance required to manage their jury vote. And as somebody who analyzes the game, if I don't have the tools to distinguish between a loyal juror and a bitter juror, then I'm not doing my job correctly. Because you can get the vote of a loyal juror as long as you're not sitting next to one of their friends. You can get the vote of a bitter juror as long as you're sitting next to somebody that they're even more angry with. And those are two very different criteria, though they, of course, could coincide. You could also befriend the person that's always going to vote for their friend out of loyalty, whereas befriending a bitter juror might only make them more upset if you have to stab them in the back. And they're not necessarily one or the other. They could be a combination of both and a combination of many other things. There are other jurors that will do their best to put their feelings aside and vote for the better player. There are some jurors that will go so far in that direction that they're more likely to vote for the person who got them out than the person who actually played the better game, because they're so concerned with not being bitter. There are some people who will vote for the person who played the most impressive looking game, because they just have a different interpretation of what a good game even looks like. There are some people who will vote for the person who had the most competition wins, because that's how they define a good game. There are some people that will vote for the person who had fewest competition wins, because that's how they define what a better game is. And we're not talking about what it actually is. There's just too much nuance to say they're either bitter or they're not. And it's a failure of our community and our discussions and our analysis that we don't distinguish between these things more. But let's move on to the final piece here. Having established all of that, definitions, understandings, different concepts, specificity, what does it mean when a jury makes a decision and the audience is upset? Do they have a right to be upset? Is the bitter jury problem a problem, or is it a feature? Well, we said before, the jury has no criteria that they are forced to follow, nor are they really heavily incentivized to follow any particular criteria. So the jury has every right to vote however they want for whatever reasons they want. They are in a position to cast judgment upon the final two players in the game and hold them responsible for the actions that they took in the game. But the same is true of the audience to the jurors. The audience is free to cast judgment upon the jurors, to hold them responsible for their votes and the reasons why they voted that way in the context of the game. And that phrase, in the context of the game, is very important, because for me, anything that goes beyond the context of the game, in my opinion, is out of bounds. Anything to do with race, religion, sexual orientation, anything beyond the confines of the game itself are not justified. There should be no harassing, no personal attacks, that go beyond the context of the game. Nothing like that. We're talking about judgment within the context of the game, judgment of the decisions that were made and nothing else. So just as the juror casts judgment on the players left in the game, the audience can cast judgment on the jurors for their decision. A jury member cannot come out of the house and say, I decided to judge the players and hold them responsible for the things that they did, and I had every right to do so, and you do not have the right to judge me for my actions or hold me responsible for the responsibility that I held when casting my vote. You do have to acknowledge that the jury member did have every right to vote how they wanted, just as you have every right to judge them for that vote. And you do have to acknowledge that you just disagree with the decision that they made, or perhaps the criteria that they made when they cast that vote. So as long as you're keeping your judgment and criticism in the context of the game, again, I'd say it's all fair. And not only fair, but kind of necessary. Because again, there's no other incentive for the jury to vote for the better player. And if most people want the jury to vote for the better player because they don't want to see the lesser player win all the time, then there does need to be some kind of pressure, incentive, something for it to happen. And some people will say they disagree with this. And that's also perfectly fine. They can and should have the right to express their opinion on how they think the jury should vote. And perhaps some observant listeners might have noticed that there's, again, another hole here, which is, how do you know that somebody was bitter? How do you know what was the true motivation in their heart when they cast their vote? How do you know that it was from a place of bitterness, especially if they're denying that it was bitter? And the answer is that you can't. You can't see inside somebody's heart. You don't know what truly motivates them. But you can guess. That's all we do when we talk about these shows anyway, is that we guess. We look at the evidence of what we have seen in the past, things that they've said, things that they did say when they were casting the vote, things that they've said afterward. Does it line up? Are there inconsistencies? Are they somebody that has been prone to anger and bitterness in the past? Did they out themselves and say, I'm not going to vote for this person because I'm bitter, and then later claim that it was not bitter? There are plenty of reasons to believe that somebody was bitter, even if they're claiming not to be. But it doesn't have to just be bitter. It can be loyal. It can be competition oriented. We can have all kinds of descriptors and all kinds of motivations that we try to distinguish when we're looking at each individual vote. And that means that some people will be wrong. Some jurors will be falsely accused of being bitter when they genuinely did try to vote for the better player. And just like everything else, if you decide to criticize, you are opening yourself up to criticism, especially if you're wrong, like Brent. So hopefully we've gained a broader understanding of what it means when we say certain things and all the kinds of different misinterpretations and miscommunications that can happen when having these kinds of discussions. And hopefully if you listen to this podcast, your discussions can be more effective and fruitful and productive in the future. And we can understand that there's a lot of nuance here and a lot of important distinctions can be made. And we can understand that everybody does have a right to criticize as long as it's respectful and in the context of the game. So, okay, everybody has a right to criticize. Everybody has a right to do what they want to do. And hopefully we can talk about things a little more easily. But it still doesn't answer the question, is there a problem with bitter juries? I guess I'd leave that answer up to you guys. Because there are people who would say that they do want rules enforced to make the jury vote in a certain way because they're continually disappointed with the outcome of a season. There hasn't been an uncontroversial vote in Big Brother since at least Big Brother 17, over 4 years ago. And Survivor has fewer issues because they're able to craft a narrative in their editing to make the audience get on board with the eventual winner. But even then, they're not always able to succeed. In fact, they often shoot themselves in the foot. And for the people that have this desire, this is not a rhetorical question, because the show has dealt with this idea before. In the past, the question was asked, is there a bitter jury problem? And the answer was yes. And the show did something about it. They changed the rules for season 4. And they later brought in Dr. Will for the jury roundtable. And even removing production interference, the audience's perspective does have an influence on how the players act. Players often want to be respected by the audience. And so if the audience is very vocal about the jury acting in a certain way, or at least not acting in a certain way, then you are more likely to see the juries act according to your wishes. So if you have strong feelings about the jury, you should be vocal about it in the context of the game, if you are respectful. And so for me, is there a bitter jury problem? I think yes. And I think that there is something that Big Brother can do to change this for the better. And if you've ever heard me talk about Big Brother before, you've probably heard me say this, but if they go back to the previous version of jury questioning and they let the jury question the final two in an open forum for an extended period of time, not make them do it in a few minutes on a live show, reading off note cards, questions that aren't even theirs, I think many people could get on board with that. And it would go a long way to solve something that is a bit of a problem. We have reason to believe that there are certain circumstances where an extended period of time in questioning could have changed the outcome of a season. And even just one change in the last 4 years would have been fine, I think. The nature of the game with so much luck involved is that the better player does not always win. And that's part of what makes the game so exciting, in my opinion. It's okay that the better player doesn't always win. It makes it all the sweeter when they do. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. It was kind of off the cuff, kind of just rambling. Hopefully it was clear throughout and I was able to make the point I needed to make. And what I'd love to see happen with this podcast, not that a ton of people are going to listen to an hour of somebody talking about these things, but I would love for it to help encourage dialogue to move forward and stop circling the same loop of like bitter or not bitter. I will definitely do a podcast on jury management and what it means to manage a jury. I think that when I see people talk about jury management, I often see people either overrate or underrate it. And weirdly, people often don't discuss the luck involved. And jury management definitely ties into this whole jury problem. And I do want to say that if I did not represent your perspective in this podcast, I do apologize. I am trying to simplify things to as much as possible. Hopefully you can understand that what I'm trying to do here is open the door for anybody to come in with their own perspective, as long as they're respectful of other perspectives. And the more that we're able to respect these different points of view, the further we can take the discussion bouncing off of it. The important part, again, as always, is to keep it in the context of the game and just be nice, guys. So that's what I have for you. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I will be back next week with some more off-season content. You can find me on Twitter at @ArmstrongTaren. Please do find me there and let me know what you thought of this podcast. You can also find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. If you do find me there, I am streaming fairly regularly and you can interact with me live. You can ask me questions about this topic if you want, and I'll be able to respond to you in real time. So you can find me there again, twitch.tv/TarenArmstrong. Thank you so much again for joining me. I'll see you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.